Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Wu, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And it seems like every day, at least on this homestand, was another strong performance for the Golden State Warriors. They won Tuesday night's game against the Utah Jazz 104-74. And while it's completely fair to at least begin some of the analysis on this game with the idea that Utah was certainly far below 100%, not only did George Hill miss this game, Derek Favors missed this game, and Rodney Hood, who's been another one of their best players, only played 10:42 due to, I believe they called it, digestive distress. He had some issues in that regard. So the Jazz were not at 100%. They were not at their offensive best. But it's also worth remembering that they have been a very good offensive team without George Hill this year, which has been one of the big differences. George Hill has played about as many minutes this year as Ian Clark has, and they've been awesome during that. I think with Hill and Gordon Hayward together, they're scoring like 120 points per 100 possessions, which is completely ridiculous. But they're also scoring 107 or thereabouts with Hayward and no Hill, and that's what they had tonight. It was a little bit weaker than that due to Hood's issues and Favors being out, but Favors has been out a lot of the year too, and the Warriors just shut them down. The Jazz could not get much in the way of good offense. In the first three quarters, Utah only attempted 13 shots in the restricted area. It's hard to really say where the definitive point of when this game became non-competitive was, but I'm using the third quarter. And that 13 is a really good number. That's a good number no matter what. But it's even more impressive because Utah had they were credited in that same time span with 6 offensive rebounds, and there was probably another one that was a team one. I didn't go back through the possession by possession to go through it, but 6 or 7 in that way is really impressive. Rudy Gobert had some nice putbacks and things like that. So to hold Utah to that sort of a performance is impressive. It's important, it's significant, and it's not the greatest data point in terms of reliability, but doing what you're supposed to defensively has resonance no matter what, even if it is that sort of a weird circumstance. And I'm sure much will be made of the fact that, partially due to just dominance on this trip, the Warriors are now back to second in defensive rating. They're just minuscule points ahead of the Jazz, incidentally. And that's great. You know, it's good that they're there, and they're allowing 100.8 points per 100 possessions, which is almost identical to last year when they were 100.9. I don't expect that overall to continue. One, because the Warriors have been really healthy overall. And two, because you just don't expect a team that to do this well as they have. But remember that they didn't start the season strong. Like when you want to think about the data set, so the Warriors have played 29 games so far this year, and representativeness of that data set, you want to see, well, has it been all on the good side? Has it been all on the bad side? Or has it been a mix? And, you know, they were pretty bad the first couple weeks. So it is not just all sunshine and daisies so far, so you expect it to really revert from there. But they have played incredibly well, particularly as a starting five. That's been one of the big differences between now and the early part of the season, is that, broadly speaking, they have done a very good job when particularly Zaza Pachulia is on the floor. And that is not to say, oh, Zaza's world's better, though he is doing a much better job over the last 2 weeks than at the beginning of this year. It's just that as an overall unit, the starting five is doing better. Stephen Curry has done a better job. Tonight was not the toughest assignment for him. With George Hill out, he got to spend more time on Dante Exum. Exum does not even really have much in the way of shot creation responsibilities, even in the garbage time lineup. He's more of an off-ball guy now, but he's nominally the one. And with Hood out, Klay Thompson got easier assignments, just kind of bouncing around with a few different guys, though players like Joe Ingles and Gordon Hayward certainly are not any, they're not any easier really than anybody else, and Hayward in particular has been great this year. So the defense was the major story tonight. The other one, if I had to say something, was Stephen Curry. Curry had statistically a similar night to some of the other ones that he's had before. But again, statistics do not tell the whole story. And the eye test, this looked more like, in terms of the nature of the offense, more like what we saw from Stephen Curry last season or the season before, both of which he won the MVP for. And a big part of that was making threes off the dribble. He had a couple where it was on like a pick and roll or it was something else. And they did do a lot of the standard, like Curry gets close to the basket, dribbles it out, passes to a teammate, and then just gets the ball back and shoots three. Some of those went in, some of those did not. But there were a couple where he just dribbled around and took the three. And that was a hallmark last year. It was something that he did very well. He is substantially still below his numbers there. I think I've talked about this on the show. I've definitely written about it for The Athletic. And we don't know exactly what the deal is there. I haven't heard him talk about it in any particular way, shape, or form yet. It's possible I've missed that, but I haven't heard it. But at a more fundamental, basic level, he just looked more comfortable taking those shots in this game. And the one that really stuck out to me, and I tweeted this when it happened, was he took a pull-up three in transition. And early on in the year, he was taking a fair amount of those, and they were missing more than they usually do. But over the last 2 weeks or so, he's really toned that down. And I would guess it's partially because they haven't been going in and because their offense is going really well. They have plenty of other options. They have other things they can do. But those are something that puts so much pressure on an opposing defense because you have to be up on him. You have to be aware. And as Curry has gotten better around the basket, that plays into it, because if you have to stay up on him because you think he might pull up, then he can drive past you and either get a nice layup or draw a foul. So you want all of those facets of Curry's offensive game to be doing well. And he's not all the way there. You know, it still isn't exactly what he was last year. It might be unrealistic to say that he'll ever get all the way there. But this was probably the closest he's come so far. And being the closest is certainly legitimate and significant in its own way. Something else that I found interesting in terms of the offense was Klay Thompson, for the second time, I think it was in the last five games, did a nice job from two. And Thompson gets a lot of attention, as you would expect, because he's a great three-point shooter. He's a great catch-and-shoot guy. And by and large, a lot of his twos are not really catch-and-shoot. They can be maybe one dribble or something like that. But he did a nice job taking what the Jazz gave him. Utah doesn't always they prioritize getting back in defense. They don't give up many transition points. But they also do an excellent job running teams off the line. And if you run a team off the line, you're going to create seams other places. And one of the big ones is from two. And the other team that is in the West that is successful and is doing this is the Clippers. The Clippers have done a great job running teams off the line. They're giving up a ton of mid-range shots. The Jazz are kind of in the same boat, not to the same degree that the Clippers are. And not only because they're worth 1 point fewer, but just they're less successful shots overall, depending on who's taking them. That is a good strategy, but Klay Thompson is one of the people who can make that strategy work. It's not reliable for him in the way that like a corner three catch and shoot is, but he can make them. And in the second quarter in particular, he really did start to. He scored 13 points in that second quarter. The Jazz as a team scored 18. And the Warriors have often used that second quarter in two different ways as a calibrator of really where they are and where their opponent is. So the first calibrator is the early stretch. So in the early stretch, broadly speaking, the Warriors are playing Durant, Klay Thompson, because he's come back from his rest, and some of David West, Sean Livingston, and often Iguodala. Against most teams, that group is doing well because they're playing against backup-heavy units. However, in this game, they were facing arguably Utah's best available five. It was the starting two through five, so it was Hood, I believe that was the last time he really played, Hayward, Boris Diaw, and Rudy Gobert, who was, of course, great for most of this game. But instead of playing Dante Exum, they were playing Shelvin Mack. Right now, Shelvin Mack is out playing Exum, and since George Hill is unavailable, you can reasonably argue that's their best five. The Warriors actually built on their lead during that stretch, and that was really significant because they had, you know, it was a disastrous first quarter for a lot of different reasons. Both teams just struggled out there offensively, did well defensively, but also missed shots they usually make. So there was a reason to believe that whoever came out stronger in the second quarter, that would be an advantage because you don't know whose struggles are going to continue. And both Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson had nice beginning stretches in the second quarter, and even though they were playing against a strong Utah lineup, so this wasn't a situation where they're beating up on backups, which that group has done from time to time. I wrote and talked about from the very beginning of the year that if teams didn't counter that, the Warriors would run roughshod. That is not why the Jazz did it, from what I could tell. It was just the way their sub-patterns worked. Hood had to get pulled early because of presumably the digestive problem early on, and just due to normal pulling, you know, Gobert doesn't usually play that huge, like, the whole first quarter, just like none of the Warriors centers do. So he was ready to come back at the beginning of the second quarter. Basically the same thing with Boris Diaw. So the Warriors got something close to the Clippers' best shot, held it close then. And then I was sitting next to Nate Duncan, as I often do, and he turned to me when the Warriors went to the Draymond at center lineup, still calling it the death lineup, late in the second quarter. I think it was about 4.5 minutes left. He's like, well, you know, we'll kind of see what game this is going to turn out to be. He ended up being completely right. The Warriors ended up expanding the lead during that point, and that made it even harder for Utah to come back, considering also how well the Warriors were playing defensively throughout the game. So they had a 22-point margin at halftime, which was just about their largest lead of the game. To that point, they did lead by 24 for a little bit. But at that point, you could make a reasonable argument that it was over. The Jazz just weren't scoring enough. The Warriors were playing well. And that's the mark of a good team, you know. That was a big frustration in their game against the Knicks, which was the first one of this. And that might have actually set the tone a little bit, was they had that crazy 36 assisted baskets in a row, but they were kind of toying around. They didn't really have the fear that they were going to lose the game. And then this one, maybe it was a little bit of respect like it was for Portland, but they just didn't really mess around that much. They just played well when they made their shots, they went in, and that allowed them to be more comfortable in this game. I hope that their takeaway was similar to mine and probably a lot of the fans, which is like, yeah, if you solidify it early, then you don't have to worry about all this stuff late. And yeah, it was frustrating that Coach Kerr still went with starters a little bit in that fourth quarter because they didn't need it. They were up 30, and Klay Thompson played 3 minutes. Draymond played 2. Durant played 1. Durant being the weirdest one because he didn't start the fourth quarter, but he came in for a little spot thing, and then they pushed the lead to, I think it was like 34 or something like that. And they were able to just basically close it out. And whatever the reason for that is, presumably it's that Kerr didn't think they had it locked up, or maybe it's that they hadn't, you know, wanted to give those guys a little bit more run, whatever. The Warriors are getting a little bit better at eliminating one of their big flaws early in the season, and this is a weird flaw, but just keeping teams in games, opponents in games that they just didn't have any right to be in. Think back to the Pelicans game at Oracle and the Mavericks game at Oracle, where both teams were completely outclassed from the start, but they got back into it, weird runs. I think the Pelicans game was in the second quarter, and the Mavericks game was in the third. And that forced everybody to exert more energy, forced them to do that. And this game, they didn't really suffer any fools. And the Jazz are a very good team. It will be probably underrated at this point how good they've been without George Hill. But the Warriors defended them beautifully. Really was a team effort. Draymond did a great job like he usually does. Iguodala was great in some very significant stretches. But really, this game, more than a couple of the other ones, it was more that there weren't any weak links. JaVale was solid enough when he was in. Zaza Pachulia was solid enough when he was in. David West did a good job again. And so that makes it even harder for teams, because the NBA, a lot of points, is about finding the weak link, attacking it, and seeing what you can do from it. And I feel like teams haven't actually done that enough against the Warriors, particularly the Curry-Pachulia pick and roll. We will see more of that moving forward. But they still did a nice job, and they deserve a ton of credit for that. They are now the second-ranked defense in the league. Also, their net rating. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with net rating, basically it's how much you outscore or are outscored by per 100 possessions. So the Warriors are now plus 13, meaning they outscore opponents by 13 points per 100 possessions, which is actually ahead of what they finished last season at. Last season they were at, I think it was 11.8. Again, smaller sample size, 29 games, is very, very different from 82. We'll see how everything works out. But they did push through the finish line last year, so there is some significance to it. And also, I looked it up for a piece that's going up for The Athletic, and the Warriors are now, I don't know how long they've been, but they're the best first half team in the league. They're actually outscoring teams by 16.5 points per 100 possessions in the first half. I had a thought that that was going to be the case because they are getting a lot of fourth quarters where they're being kind of sloppy because they don't have to be. You know, in this game, they ended up playing that Anderson Varejao, JaVale McGee, Kevon Looney combination. You know, that lineup's just going to hemorrhage points. That's just the way it is. It's not a big deal. It's not a criticism. It's just when you play three bigs that can't really do a whole heck of a lot, do that. One thing that was also interesting is that Ian Clark again played well. Coach Kerr praised him after the game, and it really does feel at this point like he has solidified the role as the first shooting guard off the bench. Patrick McCaw didn't come in until the third quarter. He ended up getting a fair amount of minutes just because he played a lot of garbage time, which is good. He should be playing all of the garbage time. But Clark did well. He actually got pulled in that fourth quarter because he fell a little bit hard. Kerr said that they done x-rays and the x-rays were negative, so that's good news. We don't know exactly what it's going to be. But Clark deserves commendation for really taking that role from McCaw. And it wasn't due to injury. It was due to being outplayed. Ian Clark did a really nice job. He deserves those minutes. And that's a parallel that Kerr made, and is certainly fair to make, is to JaVale McGee, who has outperformed some of the competitors. His is a little bit more nebulous with David West, and I'd like to see, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, I'd like to see David West get some time. But Pachulia has done also well enough to keep his spot. So right now, the ecosystem is a good thing. It will eventually become a challenge in the playoffs when you restrict their minutes relative to everybody else, because guys like Iguodala and all the stars can play a little bit more. But it's a good problem to have overall. And McGee is, it's great that he has established himself as somebody who is deserving of that sort of reliable role. And over the next few weeks, we'll see how Kerr strikes that balance, because McGee has been so good with the starters, but he doesn't need to start to get those kind of minutes and to get the kind of exposure, particularly when they're so comfortable using David West in more backup-heavy minutes. So, again, something to watch, not necessarily hugely definitive, but still definitely interesting. And the last guy that I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit in this was Iguodala. This was more of a kind of a passive game for him offensively. The Warriors didn't need a whole heck of a lot from him, but he did a really nice job defensively, kind of patching the holes that need to be done, particularly when the Warriors were playing small, because they were having Iguodala do a lot of different stuff. He was a help defender. He was reacting to guys coming into the lane. He was closing out on shooters and did a really nice job. And this was, despite, you know, only taking three shots, this was a pretty high work 26 minutes for Iguodala. So it was nice to see that against good opposition, even though this wasn't the Jazz at their absolute best. So another nice game for him, another dominant performance for the Warriors. Overall, on this homestand, they outscored opponents by an astonishing 342 to 254 in just three games. They demolished Portland, but looked very good in the other two games. And there is a very credible argument to make that they should have beaten the Knicks by a lot more. So that ridiculous margin of almost 100 points could have been 100 points in just three games. And while none of these were, you know, apex predators at the peak of their powers, they're all still talented basketball teams. There's a very real chance that all three of them end up making the playoffs. And that even though all three of them had players missing due to injuries, decisions, whatever, the Warriors still took control and beat the teams that were ahead of them. So now they get to face a different challenge. They will go on the road. They will face teams that are kind of gunning for them. I always am fascinated by when a team faces the opposing conference on the road, because those are matchups that only happen once per year. So you know that the opposing fans are going to be super into it, especially when it's the Warriors. And you know that generally the players are going to have that game circled because it's a big opportunity for them. And so that's probably a little less relevant in the Brooklyn game, just because Brooklyn isn't at the same talent level. But Detroit and Cleveland should be bringing it during that game, maybe at the expense of some of the other ones. So we'll see how the Warriors handle that. And the Detroit game being on the tail end of a back-to-back, all the storylines that come with that. So we'll see what happens moving forward. I mentioned this earlier in the week, but I'm not completely sure how I'm going to do this in terms of podcasting. Probably going to try to, I definitely have at least one, but probably two more new episodes during this week. Just trying to piece it all out together, make sure I have enough content, but also balancing family obligations and everything else. So if there isn't a new episode tomorrow, it's not because I'm sick or because something went wrong. It just could be I was busy doing other things. So don't consider that an affront or anything. It's a busy time for me and for many of us. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, and different, you can reach out to me, Danny LaRue, NBA, @gmail.com. Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.